He said, pain produces a muscle in all of us that makes us better. And he said, you can't prevent pain in your children or your husband's lives. And you can only be there to support, but you're not supposed to catch all those balls.
Hello, everyone. It's Mindy Linscombe, your host of the Something New Show, where we like to learn how to live a life worth celebrating. And today I have a special friend that flew in from South Carolina, Miss Sherry Bradshaw. Thank you for being here today.
Hey.
It's such a joy. She actually flew in to see my son's performance in a theater show last night. And that was his first ever big performance. And thank you for being that kind of a friend that you would fly across the country just to support him. And so I said, well, we've been trying to do a podcast. Why don't we do this today?
So, I'm so honored to be here. I mean, you packed up your family and came to see me this summer. Four kids and a husband in a plane flight.
You, well, let's just say we were spoiled for coming that far. I have to read about you before I get too far into this, because that was probably one of their favorite memories of 2023 is visiting Miss Sherry, that they call honey now. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But I want to introduce you to Sherry Bradshaw. If you have not heard of her or maybe heard her speak, let me tell you who she is, because she's pretty phenomenal. And I'd like you to start following her, be more acquainted with all she's doing. So she has, she likes to say, six adult beautiful children, because her three in-law children are actually three in-loves. So you had three biological children and they all got married and they have children. And so now you have five grandsons with another grandson on the way. So you're going to have a house full of boys visiting for, I can only imagine Christmas time with all these boys.
It's just a three-ring circus.
It is. I mean, there's a lot of little boys. I got to see a little bit of that when I came to visit. But you also may know her because she was Miss South Carolina in 1985, 86
is what they say.
Okay. And she was first time ever doing that pageant, won Miss South Carolina, never grew up doing pageants, which is a fun story we might hit today. Then she went on to be tied for Miss America in that same year.
Isn't that wild?
That is so wild. And Kathy Lee Gifford had to go to commercial and tell the tiebreaker of who won. And so I just think that's a really fun story to tell. And then after that, you, while you're raising your children and all the things, you wrote some books that I do want to talk about in a little while. And that is The Front Nine, Making Your Shots Count. And then The Back Nine, Finishing Strong. So they have a golf theme in there. And yeah. I know that's because you have a golf family. All your kids were college golfers. They're so successful. And I just look to you as just a wealth of life experience as a friend. I think you've been through a lot, which always makes people more authentic, which makes people a little bit more real, because it says, hey, I've had hard times too. Mm. And this is how you come through it. So I really, if I were to say, describe Sherry Bradshaw in a second, I would say an overcomer.
Oh, thank you, Mindy.
That is the best
way to describe you. I'll own that. I'll receive that.
An overcomer.
Yeah.
So when you, let's jump to your early age real quick. When you said, I want to do a pageant, was it really your dream to do pageants or was it someone else's?
Well, I never really thought about pageants. My mother entered me a few. And one of those I won, which was South Carolina's Junior Miss. But the first one, there were only three in the pageant, and there was a winner, a first and second runner-up, and I was second runner-up, so I came in last. And then after South Carolina's Junior Miss, I just wasn't interested. I was ready for college, and my mother said, well, you have a special talent, so one day I want you to enter the Miss South Carolina, Miss America. And I said, well, we'll see down the road. And she actually filled out the paperwork for me.
She to really enter wanted
a preliminary.
To do this.
Yeah. She really did. I say this to mothers all the time. Sometimes you need to believe in your daughter or your son until they believe in themselves. And she didn't have the privilege of doing all the things I got to do growing up. So she just encouraged us, and she just believed in me until I believed in me.
I love that.
Isn't that great?
And one of the obstacles you had to overcome was you had a talent that no one had ever had, and you had a height that was not so much successful in the past. So tell us a little bit about those two things.
Well, I think that's one place I would be titled an overcomer, because when I entered and won the preliminary and went to Miss South Carolina, people talked about, well, what is clogging? And we're not sure what that is. We don't know if that's a real talent. And I would describe
it. And prior to that, weren't you like the world championship clogger?
Yes, I had. And, you know, I see God's hand in my life because I wasn't entering myself in that. I was on a clogging team. And they said, oh, they're individuals. And they said, pinned a number on me. And they said, you need to do this. And anyway.
Here you are.
Here I am.
And if you don't know what clogging is, it's a really fascinating way of dancing. And when I came to visit you in South Carolina, I'll never forget, you guys, I asked her if she would clog for me. And she said, oh, I haven't clogged in years. When was the last time you had clogged?
Oh, it had been years because, you know, it's been a while and I didn't want to hurt myself. I wanted to be able to function and take care of my grandchildren.
So I said, the way I got her to do it, I was like, I'll clog with you. So I Google a video really quick and I stand up next to her just to make her feel like someone's clogging with her. And then quickly I got out of the picture and your son loved it. Everybody at the dinner table was just dying. We were rolling laughing that we got Miss Sherry Bradshaw to clog again. Mm. So that was amazing. But you used that as your talent. And
I did. And, you know, people back then, normally people that were successful were at least 5'6", 5'7". And I'm actually 5'1 and a half. They just cheated on my, and said I was 5'2", rounded or whatever. And so, you know, I had such a strong faith and my mom had believed in me. And obviously being able to clog and win world championships, that was who I was. And if it was good enough, fine. If it wasn't, fine. But I was going to give it a shot. And I'll never forget when I won Miss South Carolina, I was a little shocked because the girl that was first runner-up was beautiful. And she was like 5'8", 5'9", brunette. And every time I stood beside her, I felt like just this munchkin. And I thought, well, okay. Maybe I can go do something at Miss America.
Yes, and it gave you that confidence to go. Mm-hmm. And then who would have thought that after one pageant of a state level, you know, Miss South Carolina winning that you would go all the way to the top of Miss America?
It was mind-blowing.
Were you just, how did you feel?
Well, I just had told my mom, a lot of people, and I don't fault them for this, go through the pageant system several times before they win or before they win title and everything. But I just said, I'm one and done. I'm going to work really hard. And if I win Miss South Carolina and Miss America pageant was only 6 weeks later after I won Miss South Carolina. Mm. One in July, 1st of July, and the Miss America pageant was in September at that time. And it was on national television, NBC. And so you had to be prepared to go to Miss America. And so I just said, I'm going to do it one time, and if it's meant to be, because I'm going to give it everything, I'm not going to leave a stone uncovered. And that's kind of how I am. If I'm going to do something, all in.
I love that. Well, and then you weren't just, were you going to Clemson at that same time?
I had graduated. She wanted me to enter while I was still in college, and I was a cheerleader in college and had a full life and friends, and I didn't want to give that up because I wanted to win if I was going to do it, and then you'd have to take a year off.
She did it right after.
So I did it right after.
I love it, which that was probably one of the coolest moments of our trip to visit you was going to a Clemson game. I've never been to like a Southern school football game, and to go with you was so special because I felt like I know you were homecoming queen many years ago, but I feel like you're still the homecoming queen. So like when we pull up, everybody's like, hi, Miss Sherry. Hi, Miss Sherry. I was like, this is amazing. And it was just the vibe and the energy of a real Southern football game. It's just something that I've never experienced before, and I hope to do it again because my kids, when we did our end of year, we do a thing at the end of the year where we say, okay, what were some of the highs of the year as we close out, and we say, what were some of the lows, and we put those big post-it note sticker papers on the wall, and they write, you know, what were some of the highs and lows, and we have them around the room, and we're having a brainstorm session, and some of their top 10, all the boys wrote in their top 10 was going to your house.
That's so cool. That is so cool.
Like, and Disney Cruise was not on there, but your house.
Well, good.
I was like, well, I can save myself about a lot of money if I don't want to do the Disney Cruise section. We'll just come to your house again.
Maybe I need to duplicate my home. They call it the Honey Hotel because my grandmother's name is Honey. I picked that.
I love it.
So my kids call it the Honey Hotel.
Well, I think there's a lot to be said when we actually survey our children. What were some of your favorite moments? Sometimes we think it's the big, you know, trip that we saved for, worked hard all year as working parents and saved for this memory, right? And then it turns out to be just the most simplest, but where they felt real connection. They felt free to play. It doesn't always measure up to be the thing that was like the, and trust me, they loved the Disney cruise. Don't get me wrong. And we went with some of our close friends and it was amazing. But I just was like astonished that sometimes the simple memories are what stand out to our kids. So I think people need to just ask their kids more. What was a memory that you just really cherish? And then, I mean, I'm thinking about as you're raising your grandchildren, you just do such a good job curating an environment for them. They probably love going to your house more than any other vacation.
Well, I think they do like it. Yeah. And I'm learning I want to do over as a parent because I like that end of the year come together and everything. And if my kids watch this podcast, maybe they'll learn to do that with their kids when they get old enough.
What do you do at home to, what are some of the things you do at your house to make it such, I mean, I have stuff that I experienced as the, if you want to say consumer of being your guest, I was your guest, but I'm saying on your head and your mind, what are you doing? That's like, I just want to make this a really comfortable place that people have fun when they're here.
Well, I want to preface this by saying I didn't come up with all the ideas. My mother was a great host and very hospitable. And then I have friends that I've learned from, but I try to have hair dryers in the rooms and nice shampoos and things that people are going to spend the money to come visit. But I also do this food prep because I want to be with my guests. And I do that when my kids come and do all the grocery shopping and everything. And like when my children come and bring their children, I did that for years. And it's packing everything but the kitchen sink. So I have the pack and plays. I have high chairs. I have everything. And for your kids, I went out and bought some extra toys because my grandchildren are 3 and under. And when I got the ages of your kids, I knew we had the lake and the pool, but I went and bought some toys that they would like because I love kids. And I'm very blessed to live where I live, and I wanted them to have a good time. And so I kind of brainstormed on, okay, what might they like? And what I do.
Some things that I took note of as I host too, and I dream of being, I feel like I'm, you know, if we were Airbnb or something, you know how they have the super host status and then the like regular host. Right now I think I'm a regular host, but I want to be like a super host status. And I see you as a super host when it comes to hosting people. So some things that I noticed especially were with the food prep, you didn't actually just have the groceries, right? You actually had like the containers of all the food seasoned and ready so that you could just put that casserole dish or whatever the tray with the meat, you could just put it out there to cook. It was already seasoned. It had been marinating. It was done. So you didn't have anything. There was no prepping of the food. You just slid everything to be cooked. And every meal you were sitting with us and actually talking and enjoying us. I didn't feel like you were buzzing around that kitchen trying to do it all. The favorite food was these, your chocolate chip cookie recipe, and you had the little balls all balled up and frozen in the freezer. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's brilliant. So when it came time to dessert, you just grabbed those little balls out of the freezer, put them on the cookie sheet and put it in the oven. I was like, brilliant. So I thought your planning ahead was so strategic, and you're right. Having some of those amenities that people have to travel with just makes it so much more comfortable.
Right. I want people to come and bring as little as possible. I have washer and dryer upstairs if they need to wash because, you know, I live on the lake and you can get dirty real quick. Uh-huh. And so I just want it to be a retreat
for people. It was. So thank you for being that kind of a host.
Y'all are blessings.
Well, okay. Can we talk a little bit about how maybe life didn't go the way you thought?
Yeah, sure. I can.
Why not?
I am divorced. I was married for 34 years, and it's not something that I ever really entertained would ever happen to me. Never say never. But as life happened, that happened to me or happened
to us. And how old were your kids?
My kids were grown and gone.
Okay, great.
They were grown and gone. It was right after COVID.
Oh.
And my husband moved out, and so 34 years just in a moment seemed to vanish. And so for me, but prior to this, the COVID, I had been in counseling working on myself and seeing what I could do to strengthen the marriage and myself and my family, because things, you know, as your kids grow up and you think you do the deposits, you think you do all the things that you know to do, and things weren't going just how I had pictured them going. And so walked with a friend. She said, maybe professional counseling would be a good idea. And it was a great idea for me.
So that's really, really good. I know a lot of people listening and my friends, we all go to counseling. We love counseling, but you have a really excellent counselor. I remember us going on a long walk around where you live, and we just talked a lot about the deposits that that counselor has made in your life. So I think, you know, people, when life takes a U-turn or a left turn or a whatever kind of turn, you just, you need somebody to process that with. And a lot of times your friends and family are not equipped. It's not that they don't care. I feel like they're just not equipped to help you reframe your mindset like a counselor is. And so they can listen, they can support, they can love, but don't you feel like counselors just know how to actually give you tools to go back in a framework to work through the mess?
Once I went to counseling, and trust me, I went at 44 and I'm 61 and I'm a floater now because he's so waitlisted and he'll call me or offer me a consolation spot. But for 14 straight years, I went every week, 52 weeks a year. And it became a deep dive into me and what I could do because I was the only one sitting there. So I could change. Yeah. And what I loved is after about 5 years of counseling, I told my friends, I said, when friends start sharing with me and it comes to a point that I know I'm not qualified, and most of the time I'm qualified to listen and that's about it, I can offer experience or advice based on the experience I've had if it's similar, but no two situations are similar. And a counselor, that's why they have a job. They're trained. And I love my counselor because I love the Lord, and he opened the Bible and used psychology. He said the Bible is psychology, but he was able to turn in the Bible. God's word is what I trust. But he opened my eyes to some misinterpretations of scripture that I'd had growing up and misapplied some things. And for anyone that's listening to this and they've got a dark place in their life or they're at a place where nobody may know that they are there, I highly recommend it. But sometimes, and you have to interview a couple to find the one that fits. Somebody gave my daughter that advice. They said, make appointments with three or four people and
interview
people.
Yeah, like don't just go off of one referral.
And what I tell people is if they don't have a wait list, take a step back, because the good ones, unfortunately or fortunately, more people are going to counseling, or maybe more people need it. I'm not sure. But good ones, usually you don't get an appointment right off the bat.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good piece of advice.
And now all my kids go to counseling. Not everybody goes to my counselor, but I love it because I can say this on a podcast because they tell people they're, you know, back in the day for me, people thought if you said you were going to counseling, something was wrong with you.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
It was kind of, you felt shame and you didn't tell anybody, but my kids are very open about counseling, how much it's helped them. And I've seen it really mature and fill in the gaps of things I really didn't know to tell them that I learned in counseling, but now they've got somebody else teaching them maybe what I didn't know either.
It's no secret by now that Something New is a special place where we believe life is worth celebrating. We come here every day to make sure people feel loved, welcomed, and brought into an experience of a lifetime. You'll see friendly faces, gorgeous gowns, a well-lit showroom to highlight everyone's natural beauty, and strangers becoming friends. It's a wonderful thing to shop somewhere that listens to you and makes you feel like you're the only one that matters in this most beautiful moment of your life. We'd love to have you and your friends find your dress and become a part of the Something New family.
One of my favorite things to do on the show is to glean from people that have gone before us, that have kind of walked through some things that we hope not to walk through, but if we do, it's just knowing how to navigate it a little bit earlier. And so I want to glean from you today, like as if we're at a coffee shop and there's a 1,000 people listening to this conversation because they're thinking, well, what have you learned that maybe I would learn if I went to the counseling too? So you told me so many one-liners that we deep dived into, and I was like, let me think about that. So one of the first ones was how this gave you, it revealed some blind spots. Mm. So let's talk about that.
Okay. I would love to. The overriding three words that my counselor said that were so meaningful was drop your hands. I'm trying to put that together in a book, but let's just take, for instance, all three of my kids played college golf, played junior golf, and it's very stressful watching them. Everybody wasn't happy when they got in the car. Somebody had played well, the other two hadn't, just managing all those emotions. And my counselor said, you're not responsible for their happiness. And for some reason, I had taken ownership of that. And he said, drop your hands. He said, they work hard. They're not going to have a good day. That's life. He just taught me not to own and try to make their world perfect, and that they had to learn as young people to process their disappointments, their bad play, and not to let it ruin my day. So that's just one example. And, you know, I hate to see my kids in pain, but as a mother, he said, pain produces something. And this was back when I was in my 40s. Mm. And I see it lived out in my own life now. And he said, pain grows a muscle that can only be grown. It grows your faith, but everybody experiences pain. And the younger you experience and have a parent to shepherd you through the pain, not trying to take it, but that doesn't mean I have to own it. Even though as a parent, it's really hard to watch your kids hurt. But we had a lot of painful situations to go on, and I was carrying it all, and he just kind of took all the sticks I'd put on my back off, and I felt lighter. But he said, drop your hands, because I didn't realize how much I had my hands on. And that weren't my responsibility.
I love that. Mm. That does sound like a good book, Sherry.
I hope so. God will have to write it. But I've had the experience, and had it said to me enough time, I've got plenty of examples of what that means.
Well, and I think as moms, that's such an easy thing to do, is to try to make sure everybody's okay.
Yeah.
Like, you just always checking in, always, you know, like even the semester, my son wanted to add a class to his workload, and I want to make sure he's good. So I'm calling the principal, make sure we have all the classes that we want. And we, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's just constantly helping our kids to be in the place they want to be, that their spirits are up, mm-hmm. that they have the right friends. And it's just, it can be exhausting. So I love that he's saying, okay, back off a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, let things roll, and they won't always be happy. It sounds like they're going to also go through pain, but they're going to learn from it too.
Well, just, I don't know when I had taken ownership of everybody in my family's happiness. And that's a big responsibility.
You're like, when did I decide that was my job?
Yeah, when did, and all the balls were in the air. And he said, you're running around trying to catch everybody else's balls. And in the process, it's going to kill you emotionally. Mm-hmm. And so I started letting them drop my hands, stop trying to catch all the balls, and everybody become responsible for the balls they threw in the air. And oh, if they dropped, that was their responsibility. It took me several years to unwind what I had wound up.
I love it. And it makes me think, it's similar to something a counselor told me, was that you don't have to be the glue. Mm-hmm. Actually, only God can be the glue to keep everything together.
Well, and he said, you know, at times you're playing God in their life if you don't let God be God to them, and with their pain or how to figure out how to fix this. And when he said that, that was a knife in the heart, because I wanted to point them to God but not try to be God in their life, and trying to fix everything or help them navigate instead of listening more and pointing them. Mm. And I just learned a better way.
I love it. Another one-liner was be still.
Yeah. Be still was just to hear the voice of God. God usually isn't shouting at us, and to block out all the world. And he said, you know, I'll never forget walking out of counseling one day, and he said, you know, if God is second, he may as well be last. And so we had diagnosed that my husband and children were before the voice of God in my life. And that's a whole nother podcast maybe one day. But when I realized that, that was that blind spot, because I thought it was God, then my husband, then my children. And it took us 6 weeks to work through. Was it really that, or was it maybe my children and my husband above the voice of God? And it was just an eye-opening thing for me. I was in Bible study fellowship. I'd done that for 7 years. Community Bible study, was a facilitator to a small group. And I thought, how could I love the Lord and do all this and Him be second? And so I got very still with the Lord for the first part of my day, first fruit. And I know people can have quiet times anytime, but I really sat down and got still. And I would get up early at that time and spend 2 to 3 hours. And I would just start off just being very quiet and just getting still, because my life hadn't been very still. And it was like a cold drink in a desert for me. And as I started doing it, I did more and more and more. And God grew me in the be still season. And I'm still working to stay still, even with almost 6 grandchildren. I've added to my family, you know, from 3 to 6. And now it's 11, soon to be 12 people that are part of my family. And I'm thinking, okay, I've got a lot of responsibility.
Well, and I love that you model, actually, you are friends with your adult children.
Mm.
And that's just a testament to the type of parenting you did.
They are so special. I might tear up here, but my 3 adult children, especially in the last 6 years, they've always been great kids and they've always loved me well. But as adult children, them and their spouses, which are like my kids, they have cared for me and loved me in a way that I couldn't have imagined. And that has been the healing for me.
I love that. Well, and I really do mean it when I say, you know, as we are raising children and I'm in the thick of it, they're all at home still. Just thinking like down the road, what is really the outcome I'm aiming for? You know, and I want relationship with them.
Mm-hmm.
I want that.
You want relationship with them, and you want them to bring joy or be a joy to other people. And,
yes,
you know, a lot of people would come up and tell me, oh, Thomas or Collins or Brewer did this. And that filled my heart with joy. Because when I wasn't around, you know, they say your kids are always show out in front of you, but it's how they behave when you're not around.
Oh, I know. They're always better for other people.
And so I'm always hang on to those things. But then as adult children, and we were a very competitive family. We were playing highly competitive golf at a young age, going all over the country, and then on into college. And it was just a very stressful. And now that they're parents and, you know, they relate to me in a way that
they never
have. Oh, yeah,
they see how hard it was.
My son had a preemie, his first baby, born 11 weeks early, lots of scary moments.
Difficulties, yeah.
And he was diagnosed at 5 with type 1 diabetes, and I'll never forget that phone call. I wrote down, I tried to best I could after we hung up because I wasn't expecting it, and he was just sobbing, thanking me. He said, I never knew as a parent how you cared for me and how much it hurt your heart when I was diagnosed. I always knew how it affected me, but I didn't really look at it from your perspective. And it's just those moments as your kids grow up and things come around and God gives you these huge hugs from heaven on earth.
I love that. Well, and I mean, he really does know after having a child with complications, it's so hard. It's so hard. And he's gotten to see his mom. And it's just beautiful to see the relationship you guys all have. And nothing's perfect. I'm not saying it's perfect,
no,
but it's real. It's a very good, real relationship where you can talk honestly about what's really going on in mm-hmm. the heart. And I just think that is what I dream of. That's what I dream of.
I mean, I'll just have to say, I'm not a perfect mom. I'm the first to say it. And even in counseling after the first 3 or 4 months, I wrote my kids an apology letter telling them, I had been telling them all this time God was first, but he was really second. Mm. And I said, from today on, I want you to watch my actions. That's what I want you to believe.
Yeah.
Is God being first in my life. And after marriage and started having kids, I don't know when he slipped second place. It's scary. it just kind of evolved that way. But I wanted them to watch me from 45 on, what that really looked like. And if you see something, that you'd call me out.
I love it.
On that.
I love it. Well, you kind of jumped to my comment. No, I love. No, I'm saying I love it because we said if he's not second, he might as well, or if he's second, he might as well be last. Can we just talk about Back Nine and Back Nine Ministries and what you're doing now with the with that? What's the message of the Back Nine and, you know, that website? What's on there and how can people hear more about you?
Well, Back Nine was written at because when I started writing, and that was a gift that God gave me in my 40s. So if you're listening to this, you can manifest different gifts the older you get. And I didn't know that I could write. I'd always been speaking. And so I started writing. And so Back Nine is, I'm in the Back Nine of life. And I just wanted to write books using my life experiences coupled with scripture and write stories about lessons I'd learned along the way. And so, and then So I titled it Back Nine because I stepped into ministry and speaking. When Thomas, my five-year-old, was diagnosed with diabetes, I stopped speaking. I'd been speaking. I stopped. And it wasn't until he was in college, and all three kids were in college, that I stepped back into speaking, and I had been writing for a while. And so I did a website back then. You know, I'm still technology challenged and need people to help me, but the website is being updated because during COVID, divorce happened. I just took a step back to make sure I was speaking from a place that I was healed and knew how I wanted to respond to people's questions. And so I'm just starting to speak again, but I have a lot of life stories. You know, we won't get into this today, but both my sons independently, both almost died. I wasn't given much hope that they would live. And I've just seen God do the miraculous in my life. And I want to be an encouragement to people. And so that's really what my ministry is going and speaking to groups and encouraging them. And what I think, or what scripture has showed me, not what I think, about how God created us each, Ephesians 2:10, to do good works. And what are your good works? And have people to sit back and think about what is my created purpose? And it's really your significance. It's maybe not what you do if you're a doctor or you're a stay-at-home mom, but what is your gifts that God has given you that you can take to where you are in the workplace or at home and use them for the greater good of all? And so, and then the Back Nine is just, Front Nine and Back Nine is, when I wrote, the publisher said, well, you've really written two books, so let's divide them into two. And so he did nine chapters and nine chapters, like 18 holes of golf and that kind of thing. But there's a few golf analogies in there, but it's really not about golf per se. Mm-hmm.
Right. It's about life. And, mm-hmm. and it sounds like, and creating a life that has significance. I love it.
There's some funny stories in there because I'm not a golfer. I've watched a lot of golf. I know a lot about it. I can't swing a club. And just some funny stories as my kids started playing and me ended up on the golf course, and people figured out really quickly their mother didn't know very much. I learned, but at first, I was kind
of... You had to be indoctrinated to the golf community.
Yes, and there were a lot of funny
stories. I mean,
and
they're still, some of them are still in the golf community, even in the professional level. It's just so neat that they found a niche that they really enjoyed. And even if they didn't land in that sport, don't you feel like just that those experiences from being in such a high level of a program taught them so much?
My kids, I would not trade. That would be my sport of choice for my grandchildren, just because it teaches a lot of life lessons. You got to have a lot of integrity. You play with people for 4 hours. You get to know people. You can play it way after high school. And it's a lifelong sport. And there's just so many rules to golf, but it really teaches you, when you play with somebody, you learn a lot about somebody's character. I mean,
yeah,
it's very revealing.
Very revealing. I've never played golf. I want to try it
Me
one
neither.
Day. It's actually one of my, like, sometime in my 40s, I think it'd be fun to try it. It seems like I would like the benefits of, this is what I'm picturing. Maybe I'm really wrong on golf, but I'm like, it's social because you're like on a cart for hours, like walking around or on a cart for hours with people. It's outside, so you're getting a tan, you're like enjoying the outside.
That's right.
Weather is beautiful, you know, you're having snacks or whatever. So it's social. It's outside getting a little bit of exercise. And then you're like, no pressure. Let's go in for dinner. I mean, it's like,
it's great.
It sounds so fun.
When my daughter started playing, there weren't all these cute golf outfits. And so we started putting tennis skirts on her because she was a girly girl, and ribbons to match her shoelaces. And now it's just exploded. There's all these cute women and little girl clothes. You even go in a golf shop now and they have little clothes for little girls, which when my daughter started playing, I had to come up with something. And so it's a sport that you can go out and play with your spouse.
And you know, can play, like you said, your whole life. This is not, it's walking around, and at some point you can even golf cart around. So I just think it sounds really fun, but,
that's great.
Yeah, sometime in my 40s, Sherry.
Come on.
We should go out and learn together. Or you've already tried though.
Yeah. You're, my kids would disagree with you on me playing golf. I think I'll stay a spectator and enjoy the views and just watch all my friends learn.
I love it. I love it. Well, I love that you shared that. And if people want to find out more about you, you do write still often on your Facebook page. And I think that's pretty great. You'll do like just, you know, a little, almost like an article of inspiration. Mm. And I think that's really cool about what God's teaching you, overcoming stories. And just, it's enough that it's just like a little snippet, but it's a short read, but it's absolutely encouraging every single time. So if they want to follow you on Facebook, it's just Sherry Bradshaw, right?
Yeah, it's Sherry Bradshaw. And on Instagram, it's Sherry Bradshaw, but Mama B somehow in there. But I think you can just type in my name and find me. And Instagram, you can have as many followers. And Facebook, I don't think I have the limit. It's not, I used to have a Back Nine page on Facebook. And so we're revamping all that. But just look for either Back Nine Ministries or Sherry Bradshaw, hopefully going forward.
Awesome.
They can find me.
Okay. Now I'm not proud of, this is your favorite drink today.
Well, I'm going to feel shame with all my healthy friends, but if I got to have a vice, it's not too bad.
I hope people are listening that know us that, and they can talk you into this time next year to not be drinking this, but
okay.
What's your favorite drink, Miss Sherry?
Well, it's still Diet Coke, but I drink a lot less than
you
I used to.
Okay, we got to put this in the microphone. The opening of a fresh Diet Coke can.
Yes. And I'm not a cold turkey person, but I am a person when you know better, you do better. And so I'm doing better.
Okay. Well, we just opened our Diet Cokes and I got to tell you, I really have not drinking soda in like 20 some years, but for you, Miss Sherry Bradshaw.
Oh no.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Just like it used to be my favorite. I used to drink Diet Coke from I felt like it tasted different when it was from a dispenser at a restaurant.
Uh-huh. It does.
When it was, you know, it was the carbonated water joined with the syrup at the same time, tastes a little different than the can. And I used to love that. But yeah, I got off of it. But honestly, I know I'm giving you a hard time. This is not the worst thing in the world. So don't feel bad about it, too bad about it. But there are worse things. And I think you are looking good, very healthy. And just, I'm excited, Sherry, about what's to come for you. I feel like, you know, there's a tough season that you went through and you wrote about this other side of the, you know, life, the second half, but I almost feel like you're starting your second half now.
I do feel like God's bringing me into a season with things behind me, a place of healing, and I still have so many stories that I've lived that I've never shared that, you know, when I stop speaking, things that I think people will learn from, you know, if you don't talk about them. And I've learned too, people don't care about your wins. I mean, you can talk about Miss South Carolina first round to Miss America, but when you start talking about painful things, people identify with pain, and your mess becomes your message. And so I don't mind sharing. I can give great endings to some of the stories too.
I love that. Well, I can't wait for your next book to come out. But until then, I'm going to continue reading your beautiful Facebook posts that you share. Mm. I really always feel encouraged by them. And I'm just so thankful for you as a friend.
Me too. I'm glad to be here.
It's an honor.
I love you.
I love you. So thanks for being here today. And I hope this episode was incredibly encouraging and just another reminder of how your story can be wrapped into some great healing, some great resolve for the things you're going through. So if you like this episode, definitely like the link on YouTube, like it, but also comment. And we would love for you to subscribe, share with your friends, all the places, because we're trying to grow this mentoring channel to something that really helps others. So thanks again for listening, and have an awesome day, guys. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe to the show, rate, review, and share with a friend. Also, follow The Something New Show on Instagram and Facebook. If you want a fuller experience, watch the show on YouTube to help you create a life worth celebrating.